Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Studies about the lack of diversity in newsrooms are released on a regular basis, but Native Americans are rarely included. According to a survey from the American Society of News Editors, the percentage of Native Americans in U.S. newsrooms in 2011 was 0.48. That's 0.48, less than one half of a percent. In a piece from the Cronkite Connection, Tom Arvizo, one of today's guests, publisher of the Navajo Times, a weekly publication in Window Rock, Arizona, said hiring Native Americans is just not a priority. He said, quote, "When push comes to shove, I just don't see it happening. It's still the good old boy network, and that hasn't changed," end quote. So what will it take to increase the representation of Native journalists in the media? What issues do you want to hear about Native Americans? And what issues do you hear when you think about the last story you heard about Native Americans? Where did you hear it? And what was it about? And can you think of a time that you heard a story or read a story that didn't involve poverty, alcohol, or casinos? These questions will be the topic of conversation at the annual Native American Journalist Association Conference, which kicks off today in Phoenix, Arizona. Attendees will be discussing issues like the Violence Against Women Act, tribal sovereignty, investigative reporting, low-power FM, empowering Native communities, and social media. And joining us to talk about the state of Native American media is Tom Arvizo. He's a member of the Navajo Tribe, CEO of the Navajo Times Publishing Company, and publisher of the Navajo Times newspaper in Window Rock, Arizona. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. We're also joined by Suzanne Harjo, a Cheyenne and Muskogee. She's an award-winning columnist for Indian Country Today and author of the essay Redskins, Savages, and Other Indian Enemies, an historical overview of American media coverage of Native peoples. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Nice to have you. And Peggy Berryhill has been instrumental in organizing Native radio stations, bringing Native content and raising awareness of Native issues to the public radio system throughout her 38-year career in broadcasting. Peggy began in 1973, producing Living on Indian Time at KPFA in Berkeley. She was program director at KPFA, also here at KALW and KUNM. She's founder and president of the Native Media Resource Center, a nonprofit that produces educational material about Indigenous communities. And 2 years ago, Peggy founded a new public radio station, KGUA, in Gualala, California. Hi, Peggy. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Tom, let me start off with you. You're attending the Native American Journalists Association Conference in Phoenix. And, you know, when you look at this percentage from the American Society of News Editors, you have to kind of read it twice. I mean, 0.48%, less than one half of a percent. That was in 2011. Has anything changed in 2013?
Well, unfortunately, I'd have to say no. I think, if anything, it's probably even getting less. You know, with the economy being the way it is and what national media is doing in downsizing a lot of their staff, and, you know, I think it's not good for Native American journalists. Our representation has always been low, and really, like I said, honestly, I don't see it getting it any better.
Right, because when the economy hits and journalists lose their jobs, people of color tend to lose their jobs very quickly.
Right. I think, you know, it's not just a situation that's, you know, unique to Native journalists, but it's all journalists of color. I think we're when it comes to being on the chopping block, we're like one of the first ones that go.
Why is that?
I talked about the good old boy network, and really I think that still prevails. You have people who are owners of these, you know, large media companies, the publishers, the board of directors, and they take care of their own. You know, I just honestly believe that when it comes to cutting down the staff, and a lot of times you'll find that journalists of color are the ones that are on the front lines. They're the reporters. They're the ones that are actually out covering the hard subjects, out in the streets, out in the reservations. And when it comes time to chop them and, you know, cut down their staff, we're the first to go.
Suzanne, why do you think the numbers are so low? 0.48, less than one half a percent. That's the percentage of Native Americans in U.S. newsrooms.
Well, the editors just aren't getting out into Indian country to find out where the Indians are and what life is like and who the reporters are and who the editors are and who's doing radio and who's doing social media. This has to change, and I would urge all the mainstream editors to take trips out to all sorts of Indian country, not just Pine Ridge and not just Navajo land, which are wonderful places to go to, but there are 560-some Native nations within the United States, and those are only two of them. And most of the stories are done about those two. And as you noted, most are done about alcohol, casinos, and really stereotypes. And that's another problem, is that stereotypes are so prevalent, from the kitchen to the sports arena to history books and the ways history is taught, that people, including reporters and editors, think they know us and can speak for us and can understand who we are and that we personally are expendable.
And Peggy, you've been in broadcasting for 38 years, an incredible career, and I'm sure you have so many stories to tell. When you look back, what changes have you seen, especially when it comes to trying to bring more Native Americans into our newsrooms?
It's actually 40 years now.
40 years.
It amazes me. I think there's a couple of changes that are positive. Not so much for newsrooms, though. I have to give newsrooms still the same rating that both Suzanne, who, by the way, is my distant cousin, and Tom Arvizo gave. There are people who think that they know enough to tell our stories. And so, and as for Native people, people of color in general, they've disappeared, including from public radio to a large degree. Now, here's the good news. There is a little bump in that 0.48%. There are now 58 Native American-owned public radio stations on the air in 21 states. There are at least 13 independent shows on public radio, and there's a couple of stations that are in the process of being built. Now, that's good news. That is news for Native communities. Now, of those 58 on the air, only a few of them are urban or not owned by a tribe or licensed to a tribe.
Okay. Right, because that's what I was wondering. Are these on Native land? I mean, are they being heard by other people besides Native Americans? Because that's really important, too.
Well, several of a few stream. Not a huge amount stream. And, our station here in Wallala is, we're your typical community radio station, so we're serving a diverse community. So we're a little different. KNDA in Anchorage, Alaska is the only urban Indian station, really, large station. The others are more on Indian land.
What about identity, for example? Because, Tom, I mean, how do we know that Native Americans make up just 0.48% of newsrooms? I mean, what about people who don't necessarily identify as Native American? I mean, there might, like, for example, my father's Native American. I don't think I'm probably counted in this survey. So do you think it might be higher and maybe people just don't have Native American in their bio, for example?
Yeah, that could be part of the answer. No, not being federally recognized as a Native American. You bring up a unique point there. A lot of us Native Americans, we not only have a Social Security number, but we have a government number, too. We have a census number. So we have two different numbers. They keep track of us. But that could be part of the answer. I think really, though, it just comes down to the fact that a lot of the big major news media companies just aren't hiring journalists of color. Mm. And when it comes to Native American journalists, we're the least represented. And it's not because we're not trying, though. We've got some really young, talented journalists on the horizon right now that are just, knocking on the door, just waiting for an opportunity. And it's been that way for a couple of generations. Myself and Suzanne, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, we were the young journalists. We were the ones that were knocking on the door, and we weren't given the opportunity. So, it's kind of like our job now to try and push our younger journalists. We support them. We want to empower them as much as we can. And hopefully they can make a difference and break through those barriers. But it's an ongoing struggle, and I don't see it ending anytime soon. But, we're not going to give up, definitely.
What does the conversation sound like with young people? Because I'm sure that people struggle when you think about where you'll try to break in. Should I work for the Navajo Times, or should I try to go work for the LA Times, right? And try to bring in stories about Native Americans where you have, maybe an audience that just doesn't think much about these issues, whereas I'm sure the audience of the Navajo Times thinks a lot about these issues.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Yeah, Tom.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I think with our younger journalists, we encourage them. We say, you've got to get experience, and we want them to get off the reservations. We want them to go work for major publications, major, radio stations, television stations. We encourage them to do that. And when every once in a great while, you'll find someone who does actually get through the front doors. But it comes through programs that, internships, with the help of, NAJA and other media companies like the Freedom Forum. There are opportunities that arise and where we can get our young journalists through the front door, where they can intern at the LA Times or at the New York Times. But when it comes to actually getting hired, though, that's where we're running into the problems. We encourage our young journalists to try and go forward and get in with the big media companies. But we're always there, and we've got a lot of journalists that work with our newspapers and with native media. But it's we'd rather that they go out in the world and see what's all out there.
That is Tom Arvizo, member of the Navajo Tribes, publisher of the Navajo Times newspaper in Window Rock, Arizona, and he'll be attending the Native American Journalist Association conference in Phoenix, which kicks off today. Suzanne Harjo is Cheyenne and Muskogee, an award-winning columnist for Indian Country Today, Media Network, and author of the essay Redskins, Savages, and Other Indian Enemies, an historical overview of American media coverage of Native peoples. Peggy Berryhill has been in broadcasting for 40 years. She began in 1973 producing Living on Indian Time at KPFA in Berkeley. She was program director here at KALW, KPFA, and KUNM. 2 years ago, she founded a new public radio station, KGUA, in Gualala, California. And Peggy, when you look back at your career, what really does stand out for you in terms of, what was it like for you to start a show, Living on Indian Time, I love the name, at KPFA in Berkeley back in 1973?
It was pretty exciting. I always considered myself more of a print journalist. That's always been my love. I was able to adapt my love of community, and it was the 70s. It was a very heady time, breaking down stereotypes. But to do this show, and I have to remind people, in 1973, FM radios were very expensive, and there weren't many in the Native community. And one of my favorite memories is that people used to gather at people's houses, wherever anybody had an FM radio, and listen to Living on Indian Time. And I was discovered by NPR. I didn't seek them out. They discovered me, and I ended up going, I am the only Native person who was a producer, and that's with a capital P, not an intern, not an assistant, but a capital P producer at NPR. So that I think was exciting. It was the 70s, and I, honed my skills running around with a microphone.
Well, yeah, we love that. So what was it like for you when you got hired by NPR? I mean, when did they say, we want you to bring these issues to the airwaves, and were they open to bringing on more of these issues that didn't involve poverty and alcohol?
It was yes and no. It was a very different time. The people of color were what we had our own department. We were called the Department of Specialized Audiences. We were not allowed on the first room news floor. And in fact, the news editor at that time, at one point I was talking to him, and he told me, he said, Peggy, there will never come a time when women will be able to cover women's issues, when blacks can cover black issues, and Indians can cover Indian issues, because you're all, just too biased. And so I said to him, well, then why do you have white men covering Congress? And he turned heel and walked away from me, fuming. So have things changed? Yes, there is no Department of Specialized Audiences. I think, NPR does a very good job of what it does. But it's still, I don't believe that it covers race issues very well, and that you don't get authentic voices. And here's the big change to me. We used to do documentaries. I think documentaries were very important because topics require you need to look at the many angles and many sides of it. Today, a lot of public radio has moved to monologues. Monologues are interesting. They are riveting. But if you take one Navajo, to talk about what's going on with the tribe. You know, you don't know, again, and this is journalism, you have to follow your sources. Are you getting a Navajo person who's angry at the tribe? Are you getting a Navajo person who's educated about sovereignty?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with a monologue, you don't know. You can get sympathy or empathy. But when it comes to Native issues, the issues are complicated, and you're dealing with sovereigns. So how do you know you're actually getting an authentic voice and an authentic story? That, I think, is what's lacking. We don't have long-form documentaries anymore.
Tom, can you speak to that? Because, and also, how do you deal with, I mean, there are a lot of issues concerning tribal-owned stations, right? And are you allowed to criticize the tribe?
Well, you know, first of all, I think that when you deal with tribal governments and owning their own media, whether it's the newspaper or the radio station or television station, you know, that's a big issue in any country now, is the continuing censorship by our own tribes. A lot of the tribes will allow you to practice freedom of the press up to a certain point, but they say, you know, don't criticize our government, don't, you know, air our dirty laundry, don't be critical of who we are as a nation. And that still prevails in any country, and it's something that, you know, we are dealing with on a regular basis. The Navajo Times, we actually had to break away from the Navajo tribal government. We became a for-profit enterprise in order to get away from the censorship issues. Not only that, but to also actually operate as a real business. And it's a big problem in any country now. I have a lot of friends who I've, you know, offered advice to and challenged, and I said, stand up to your leaders. That's the only way you're going to be able to really see how far you can go when it comes to freedom of the press issues. And unfortunately, when they've done that, they find themselves getting suspended or fired.
Oh.
And I feel really bad about that. But it's an ongoing issue. But I do see it getting better, though. I think as the generations are changing, you're finding a lot more young leaders coming into power who realize the power of the media. And they realize that they have something you know, really special when it comes to a tribal newspaper or a radio station or a television station. And they need to really let them exercise their right to tell the stories that need to be told.
Right. Well, and when you talk about the power of the media, I think back to, I mean, Peggy, you brought up NPR. Well, obviously you worked there, but they had this amazing report in 2007, rape cases on Indian land go uninvestigated. And this became a multi-part series. It got so much attention. And I think because of that story, the Violence Against Women Act was covered in many ways through a Native American lens. I mean, I was seeing stories, Ms. Magazine, The Nation Magazine, so many outlets looked at how the Violence Against Women Act would affect Native women. And Suzanne, I'm sure you heard that piece. Can you talk about the power that that piece had?
Well, the power was in the reporting, which was great work done by Survival International. And many of us had called for the Violence Against Women Act to be amended to include tribal jurisdiction regarding domestic violence. And that was the great achievement in this VAWA fight this year. But we started calling for that in 2004. And yes, the power of the media is immense. I have no hard luck story about radio. I'm a radio-osaurus, and I predate my cousin Peggy in the 1960s in New York at WBAI, also a Pacifica station. And I went there to produce Native programming and ended up being the director of drama and literature and filling a third of the airtime of a 24-hour station, and that was fabulous. Our elders tell us, never go in any place by yourself. Always take someone else with you, and I was able to bring in other Native producers and techies and people who had just never been inside a radio station, who had great voices and were interested in doing things around the radio station, and talked to some techies, and it turned out they were techies. And that is, so you know what you know, and exposure is everything. And that was just a wonderful place to be and to colonized.
That is Suzanne Harjo. She's an award-winning columnist for Indian Country Today. Tom Arvizo is publisher of the Navajo Times newspaper in Window Rock, Arizona, and Peggy Berryhill, longtime broadcaster, first had her show Living on Indian Time at KPFA in Berkeley. 2 years ago, she founded a new station, KGUA, in Gualala, California. And today we're talking about the state of Native American media. Why are there so few Native Americans in newsrooms? What do we all lose as a result? What stands out for you when you think about the last story you heard about Native American communities? What did not include casinos, poverty, and alcohol? We'd love to hear from you. And what stories do you want to hear about Native American life? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And now I would like to welcome Hattie Kaufman to the show. Hattie started her broadcast career on college radio. I love all the radio people today at the University of Minnesota. She began to report and anchor for KING 5 News in Seattle, earning 4 Emmys. ABC's Good Morning America took Hattie to New York in 1987, where she served as a special correspondent. And then in 1990, she moved over to CBS News as a substitute and as a correspondent and sub-anchor on CBS This Morning. She says she was the first and only Native American to work on the network television stations. She's no longer at CBS. She's got a memoir coming out, Falling Into Place, in September. Hi, Hattie. Welcome to the show.
Hi. This is such a treat to be on with these legends.
Well,
Suzanne. Tom, I'll include you, too. But these two, I've heard your names from the day I started. So it's really great to join you.
Well, it's great to have you. And Hattie, is that true? You were the first and only Native American to be on the
funny,
TV
I
networks?
I didn't know that. I just was doing my job. I was a reporter at in local station. Then I got hired to Good Morning America. I happened to be in Hawaii working for Good Morning America when there was a mishap with the United Airlines flight where the fuselage tore. I got a telephone call from New York. It was from World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, and they were asking me if I could cover this for them. Of course I could. I ran out. I did the story. It aired. And I didn't. And I just continued on. In my career doing my work, I didn't realize that moment was historic when it aired. Apparently, there had not been a Native American reporter who had filed a report on a national network evening news broadcast.
Wow.
And I didn't know until the Newseum called me, which is the museum dedicated to news in Washington, D.C., to ask if they could put a little plaque up about the first time a Native American reported for network news. So I didn't know until years later. I actually tell that story when I speak to young people to encourage them to go into the business because it's just about showing up, doing your job, and you might make history along the way, but it's just working hard and doing your job.
Now, did you identify as Native American? Were you introduced as a Native American reporter?
Oh, absolutely not. In fact, it was drilled into me in journalism school that we are simply witnesses of history, and we are not to identify as one thing or another. I worked in the regular, obviously I was not working for a tribal newspaper. I was working for a local television station in Seattle, and then I was working for a morning show, national show, and I was working for CBS News. And so I covered everything, all of the big stories of the day. And we're supposed to go in, interview somebody on one side, interview somebody on the other side, and we are to be blank slates. Now, of course, there's a lot of controversy over bias in the media, and are we really blank slates, but absolutely not. I was not a Native American correspondent. I was a correspondent.
And hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Today we are talking about the state of Native American journalism in the year 2013, comprised less than 0.5% in newsrooms. We'll be back after this.
If you'd like to join today's conversation, if you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to the program, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also send us an email question or comment. Address it to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, and we will be discussing the coverage of the acquittal of George Zimmerman for the murder of unarmed teenager Trayvon Martin. This case has generated such an intense media debate about issues of race and racial profiling. So we'll talk about that. How do you think journalists should cover race and racism in the year 2013? We'll be joined by The Guardian's Gary Young, who's out with an explosive column this week called Open Season on Black Young Men. Independent journalist Davey Dee and NPR commentator Sandeep Roy will also be here, so be sure to tune in tomorrow. And if you saw some good reporting on this case, we'd love to see it. You can email it to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And then coming up on Monday, does knowing who the man Oscar Grant was change the way you view his death? The film Fruitvale Station is now out in theaters. It tells the story of Oscar Grant's last day and looks at the violence on the BART platform and the shooting that led to his death. So if you have a chance, see the film and then be sure to call in on Monday. And then we're also putting shows together next week about how Medi-Cal works in California, the history of the Bay Area's disability rights movement, and how workers and unions should communicate with the public. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the state of Native American media. Today kicks off the Native American Journalist Conference in Phoenix, Arizona. According to a survey from the American Society of News Editors, the percentage of Native Americans in newsrooms in 2011 was 0.48, less than 1%. And when you think about that, we've got a statistic. According to the 2010 U.S. Census, Native Americans make up 0.9% of the U.S. population. I didn't even realize it was that low, 0.9%. So what are your thoughts on that? 0.9% of the population, 0.48% of newsrooms. Today we are joined by Tom Arvizo, member of the Navajo Tribe, publisher of the Navajo Times newspaper in Window Rock, Arizona. Suzanne Harjo is an award-winning columnist for Indian Country Today. She's Cheyenne and Muskogee. Peggy Berryhill started in 1973 producing the show Living on Indian Time at KPFA in Berkeley. She was program director at KPFA and here at KALW and KUNM. 2 years ago, she founded a new station, KGUA, in Gualala, California. And we are also joined by Hattie Kaufman. She's the first and only Native American to be on the national networks. She started her broadcast career in college radio at the University of Minnesota. She's worked for ABC's Good Morning America, CBS's 48 Hours, filed reports for The Early Show, CBS Evening News, and her memoir, Falling Into Place, is being released this September. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255. What stories stand out for you about Native American communities, and what stories do you want? Why is it important to have Native Americans telling their own stories? And Hattie, what are your thoughts on that? In newsrooms, 0.48%, and the overall population, Native Americans make up 0.9% of the population.
What's funny, I didn't realize it was so low, 0.9. So then if you look at that, it's only half a percentage off. It's not as bad as it seemed. When you first gave the 0.4, it sounded terrible. But actually, there is a huge lack, and it has a ripple effect, because if there are not Native Americans working on the editor's desk or working in the newsroom, then stories don't get told. You need to have that set of ears on the inside that are connected to the reservation or the urban communities and know what's going on. Otherwise, there are valid stories out there that just don't get told.
You know, and why is it, Peggy, that when you think about like Black media, Asian media, Latino, I mean, it seems to be part of the broader conversation, right? Because you hear that whites are becoming the minority. And so we need to learn more about the Latino community. Right now, we're having obviously this major conversation about Trayvon Martin and racial profiling. But even when it's not about something so explosive, it seems like issues affecting other communities are part of the broader conversation. But when you talk about Native issues, it's sort of, yeah, that happens over there, and that's on the tribal station.
Well, I think it's what Hattie was just pointing out, is you have to have the editors. It's great to have reporters, but you need people in management. You need people who are in decision-making positions to get the stories out. I mean, one thing that's an important story this day is the Baby Veronica story.
Right.
You know, and the NCAI issued a statement because South Carolina decided to remove Baby Veronica from her father. that's a story that did get some national play. It's an important story. We're not hearing about it anywhere. I think, but you know, you have to be in decision-making positions, and that was sort of the decision I made by not staying at NPR, but to go into the boardrooms and to work on getting people of color and women. You have to remember, when I started, even women, there were few and far between at that time,
mm-hmm.
In the newsrooms. So it's the people who make the decisions and the stories that get covered. Suzanne was on The Takeaway with John Hockenberry last week. She's, as you know, eloquent, has a lot to say. She got two very pithy quotes about the mascots, and John spent the rest of the time talking to somebody else. I thought that was very telling because, you know, Suzanne is a very good to talk to, very intellectual, can explain a lot of things. She got two good, Suzanne, I will say, good, pithy comments, but no conversation.
Hmm. Right. Well,
another thing.
Yeah, so we're excluded from the conversation.
Again. Another thing, Peggy mentioned is
about race,
story,
for example.
Suzanne, sorry about that. We actually have you both on the same line. Suzanne, you want to jump in there?
Oh, Native people are, for the most part, excluded from even the conversations about race.
Mm-hmm.
With the Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman issue that affects our sons and our daughters who wear hoodies,
mm-hmm.
as well, and our grandkids, we're nowhere on the horizon. Race is not a black-white issue. It is a multifaceted issue, and we should be there, but we're never even included in the first, second, or third round. We're not even included as an afterthought.
Yeah, and why is that important? Because I notice when studies come out about affordable, you know, housing or poverty or homelessness, I mean, you name it, it's blacks, Asians, Latinos, Native Americans are rarely mentioned. So why is it important, Suzanne, to include Native Americans in this?
Because our troubles are immense. All you have to do is look at a country in 1491 and look at it now and look at our tiny, tiny population and our small amount of land that we own and resources, and we owned it all. What happened? Why is that? What can we do to prevent teenage suicide, which is the worst in the nation? The highest in the nation is Native teenage suicide. People need to look at these really tough issues.
And Tom, I think what's tough is you had Diane Sawyer from ABC go to Pine Ridge and talk about Native suicide, and a number of young Natives put together YouTube videos saying there's more to us than suicide and poverty. You know, these are our voices, and they held up placards saying things like, you know, I'm a sister, this is what I'm interested in, see beyond that. And so how do you deal with that? Because if you have a network and they say, all right, we're going to spend these resources on this issue, chances are they're going to focus on the suicide or the poverty.
Well, unfortunately, you'll find a lot of times when national media does come to a reservation, it's usually having to deal with some kind of a tragic event that's taken place on the reservation, and that's just a classic issue. But we do, I mean, I think that's why it's important for us as Native journalists that we're able to really tell our own story and serve as a source, a valuable source for the national media to come to, so that they can get a well-rounded story and not just, you know, focus on something tragic or something in like teenage suicide, which is a big problem, and, you know, make no doubt about it. But there are a lot of other things that our young people are doing. They're becoming teachers. You know, they're using social media now to help empower their own people in changing the way of life. There's a lot of good things that happen. It's just that's part of the issue in dealing with the national media, the stereotypes that come out. That seems to capture all the attention. But it's an ongoing issue, and we as Native journalists, though, if we do our jobs, you know, that's all we can do is tell the stories the best way we can, be professional, and we're there. If, you know, we're a valuable source that they would just come and ask us.
Oh, well, let's hear from a young journalist. Shelby's calling in, and she works with Out of Your Backpack Media, which empowers Indigenous youth through movie-making workshops. Hi, Shelby. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about Out of Your Backpack Media.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so Out of Your Backpack Media is based in Flagstaff, Arizona. We're a collective of Native filmmakers / media makers. We conduct and host, host 3-day filmmaking workshops that includes three phases of production, such as script writing to camera handling and editing. And we focus on media justice and youth empowerment through media literacy.
What stories do young Natives want to tell? When you have your meetings, your editorial meetings, what comes up?
When we have our workshops, youth comes in, or when the youth, sorry, good question. So we produce like different films in our workshops that includes anything from short documentaries to short narratives, PSA music videos, animations, and to like zombie movies to address different social issues, environmental issues.
No, I'm just wondering because, you know, you get very similar stories in the national media, and I'm just wondering what young people, like if you had Diane Sawyer go to Pine Ridge, what would you want her to talk about? What would you want her to focus on? Or if she came to you, if she came to your community, what story would you want her to tell?
Well, definitely like focusing on positive stuff and not like what was mentioned earlier, the negative, but like, you know, giving an example to other indigenous communities. Like, I guess I would tell her about Out of Your Backpack Media and the different youth that comes through, and then definitely going on into, going to school for filmmaking, either to, like, graphic designs, like, definitely shining a light on that. Also, like, talking to some of our participants who have come to our workshops, having them tell their own stories.
And do you find, we were talking earlier, Shelby, about the importance of also working in the more mainstream organizations. Do any of the young people you work with aspire to work for, like, you know, like the Washington Post or the New York Times? And do they feel like they might have a way to get in?
I do want to say yes, if that's what they're going to definitely find a way there. But I also do believe within the next few years is that, all our talented young journalists to filmmakers to storytellers to just be creative and just do your own media.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Shelby. That is Shelby. She's calling from Out of Your Back Media. They empower indigenous youth through movie making workshops. And today we are talking about the state of Native American media. Today kicks off the Native American Journalist Association Conference in Phoenix, Arizona. And we'd love to hear from you. When we do shows about Indian issues, we get a lot of response and calls. And so when you think about the stories you've read or heard, what stands out for you? What stories do you want to hear more of from Indian country? And how can stories of what's happening in Indian country illuminate what's happening in our broader society? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Today we're joined by Suzanne Harjo, Cheyenne and Muskogee, and an award-winning columnist with Indian Country Today. Tom Arvizo is publisher of the Navajo Times newspaper. Peggy Berryhill began her broadcasting career in 1973, producing Living on Indian Time at KPFA. She's been a program director there, KALW and KUNM. And 2 years ago, she founded a new radio station, KGUA, in Gualala, California. And I wanted to read a comment from Joseph Orozco from KIDE, a station of the Hoopa Valley Tribe in California. He writes, quote, "Speaking from 33 years of Native radio experience, my opinions as to why America does not hear more news coverage is because non-Native stations tend to give marginal broadcast hours to Natives because I think there are more local stories to cover. A larger barrier is the fact that in Native communities, radio and other media are not seen as viable career choices. Parents don't push their young toward being journalists or to be communicators. These are federal agencies that support many of these careers, such as Indian Health Services, Native Education Offices, unions, and legal venues, but nothing for media on a local level. Interesting. Tom, what are your thoughts on that?
I think he's brought out some good points, but I do see a change. I think we've got a whole new generation of young storytellers now. We've got like 19 interns or 19 students that are participating in a student project here at the Nadja Conference, and they're all great. They're all talented. They're multi-talented. I just see that changing, and you know, we as the older generation of journalists, you know, we're here to support them and try and you know promote journalism as a viable career, and I think they understand that. With technology being the way it is now and advancing so much, and it's really starting to pick up in Indian Country as well, I think our young students are realizing just what, you know, the power that the newspaper has and the radio and the television station and what social media can do for them and for their people. I see it changing, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing for all of us.
Do you think also, Peggy, based on the conversations you've had with editors, that there might be a misconception that the public doesn't want information about Native Americans?
You know, I don't think so. I know that I think all of us on this phone call know that people are really interested in Native Americans. I do think that sometimes there's a disconnect, and I know from experience that what Indians want to hear about Indians is not necessarily what the general public wants to hear about Indians.
Hmm.
But here's the interesting thing. What Indians want to hear is they want to hear the Native intelligentsia that exists within Indian Country. Mm-hmm. They want to hear people making national comments on Trayvon Martin or what Ben Bernanke says. You know, they want that Native voice as part of the conversation, as Suzanne said. That's really, really important. So I think really it does a lot of times boil down to the editor and their understanding or lack thereof of sovereignty. And there's no quick, fast ways to tell these stories when you're dealing with the larger issues. So I think well, I know people love to hear about Indians.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Suzanne. I wonder what your thoughts are on that. I remember Keith Olbermann when he was still on MSNBC. He did a one-minute explosive commentary about a storm that hit Pine Ridge in South Dakota. It was just 1 minute, no visuals. And he really slammed the U.S. government, saying they need shoes. We're not talking about Haiti. We're talking about people in South Dakota. If you can, help them out. Well, I called the tribe to see what the reaction was, and they said, you know, we thought we'd maybe raise $20,000. They raised $750,000, and people from the surrounding states drove hours to see if they could help. And it just shows that, you know, what the power of a one-minute commentary really got people activated.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, your point about the power of the media is, can't be repeated enough. And it's so energizing to hear the voice of young people coming up and having that kind of new energy. It's very exciting. And being here at the Nadja Conference in Phoenix is also invigorating, because Peggy and Tom and Hattie will remember when we could meet in a hotel room. I mean, a small one, and that was the world of Native journalists for a while in the 70s, and in the 60s it was almost non-existent. We could meet in a shower stall.
Wow.
And that was true of broadcasting for sure. One thing that Diane Sawyer and other people should remember is, just because they might get slammed for something, they're not personally getting slammed for covering a story. They're just not being made powwow princess, or they're just not being made, you know, the chief with a war bonnet or something. They have to just understand that they're dealing with very fragile situations sometimes, and they're going to touch a lot of different nerves. And I thought it was great and showed a lot of spunk that those young Sioux people in school came out and did their, you know, "We're More Than Suicide" reaction to Diane Sawyer's piece. But that doesn't mean that her piece was horrible.
Right.
It just means, or that people should stop doing pieces. People should report how they see it and try to develop friendships with Native people, try to go through the community colleges. I mean, the tribal colleges and universities are great. They'll meet lots of young people and lots of elders and lots of people who are really educated. I wanted to say one other thing about Peggy and I, you know, growing up in Oklahoma, around so many Native nations, really had a tradition of communication within our own Muscogee Creek Nation. Alexander Posey, at the turn of the century, owned a newspaper in Indian Territory before there was an Oklahoma. There was a Muscogee man who owned and edited and wrote columns as Fusfixico, and he was a great storyteller. Will Rogers, who was Cherokee, a lot of people don't know that. They just think he was Oklahoma. I mean, these are communicators, and these are some, they all gave us permission to do what we do. Mm-hmm. And we, so it's not so that we're not raised to be communicators. We encourage our kids to be communicators. We have great traditions of communicating, and we have a lot of important role models.
Well, we've got just a few minutes left. Let's hear from a few callers, and then we'll get responses. Let's go to Nancy in San Francisco. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Well, just to introduce myself, my name is Nancy Iverson. I'm with an organization called PATHSTAR, which works to encourage healthy lifestyles and nutrition with Native Americans. Hmm. And every year we bring a group to San Francisco, and they literally immerse themselves in this program because they swim in the bay and finish with an Alcatraz swim. And the Friday night that Diane Sawyer was on national TV, we actually had six people from Pine Ridge here preparing to do the Alcatraz swim. And I just thought, wow, it would be so great if we had the same resources to access that national news coverage and let people know what's also happening with Pine Ridge people. Or this year we have six people coming from Washington State. And I just heard the woman from Seattle and thinking, wow, if this could be on national news to tell another side of the story.
Yeah. Where can we find information about your organization?
It's our website is www.pathstar.org.
PATHSTAR. Okay, great.
And we'll have our 11th Alcatraz swim this year on October 14th.
Great. Well, maybe we can do a story about it.
I think we're actually on track with you to do a story. And the local coverage has been fantastic, and there's been some stuff. Keeley Radio, of course, has been great back in Pine Ridge. And it was just so wonderful to keep telling a story about another component that's working while all the poverty and the other issues are working, too.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Nancy. We'll get a comment in just a minute. Let's hear from Esmeralda in San Francisco. Hi, Esmeralda. Hello, Esmeralda. Nope, I think we lost her. Esmeralda wanted to say Native Americans are the most environmentally conscious, and that really should be addressed in the media, especially as we hear about climate change. Tom, just quickly, we've got a couple more minutes left. What stories do you think a broader audience needs to hear about Native issues, Native communities?
Well, first and foremost, I think as Native people, we're really proud of our heritage. We're proud of our traditions, our culture, and there are so many different stories that we can share when it comes to talking about who we are as Native people. You know, we're all from different tribes, and we have different traditions, different customs, but yet we're all still the same. We're all related. Mm-hmm. And so that, to me, is always a great topic to talk about, is who we are as Native people, who we represent, and talk about our language, the beauty of our language, the beauty of, you know, our culture. That, to me, is like one of the biggest stories that we could share, that needs to be shared.
Peggy, what would you add to that list?
Oh, you know, yes, environment, history, I mean, just the wisdom of looking at the issues, you know, how we can share the cultural values to justice stories. What would our tribes do, you know, originally with justice when it came to something like the George Zimmerman case? I think there's lessons to be shared there.
And Suzanne, what stories do you want
to
tell?
We know how to be in this world. This is our country. This is our old country. We didn't come from anywhere else. This is where we are. This is where we belong. And this is what we know. And there are lots of things that, if we weren't constantly assaulted, that we could help the world with. We really need to be part of every conversation in order to keep the world in balance. I really believe that.
And final thoughts from you, Peggy, just about Native journalism. Do you think it helps if people write to editors and say, I'd like to know more about this, or I know that these people from Pine Ridge are coming to swim in Alcatraz, you might want to cover this. Does that help?
I don't think it can hurt at all. I would like to say that we have continually focused on Pine Ridge, which is there's some great stories that have been done there.
Yeah.
But I think that that's, you know, again, we have to broaden the scope. And like right here in California, we've got 150 bands and tribelets, and they've got great stuff going on. Language revival. I have to share a quick story.
Oh,
we
have just about 15 seconds.
Oh, okay. The BBC called me once. They wanted to do stories about Native America. I told them to come to California. They said, no, we want to go farther west.
Welcome to the ocean.
Right.
Peggy Berryhill, Tom Avizo, and Suzanne Harjo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, everybody. Good to hear everyone.
Thank you. I'm Rose Aguilar at Shore Call. Thanks for listening. On the next Shore Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the acquittal of George Zimmerman for the murder of unarmed teenager Trayvon Martin. The case has generated an intense media debate about issues of race and racial profiling in the U.S. So how should journalists cover race and racism in 2013? We'll be joined by The Guardian's Gary Young, independent journalist Davey D, and NPR commentator Sandeep Roy. Where did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.